This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9, Friday morning show with Leo. Now, it's 2015 and it's hard to believe that bullying is still happening, especially in school, something that our young LGBTI youth can relate to. My next guest suffered greatly in the hands of bullies at school before turning to alcohol and drugs to erase the pain. He's written a book about that time, The Fry Boy. Joining me on the line is the author, Mr. James Fry. Welcome to Joy, James.
Thank you so much for having me, Leo. I appreciate it.
Now, let's set the scene here, James. As a child, you had loving parents, you had two younger brothers, friends from all walks of life. You were just 8 years old when the bullying started. And you went through some pretty awful times in that time, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right, Leo. I guess it all started, you're right, when I was 8 years old. I changed schools, and up until that point, you know, I was enjoying school, wanted for nothing, loving textbook kind of family. But soon after changing schools, I became the target of a pretty vicious bully. And that continued on an almost daily basis for about 3 years until one day I just said, you know, I'm not getting the help I need. I'm just not going to go back.
I have to be honest, James, because that first part of the book I found quite hard to read because it brought back some really horrible moments for me when I was going through high school, in fact. And things like, you said in your book, trying to avoid the bully at school, telling a teacher, telling your parents, not wanting to go to school. But like you, I mean, I was also a bit lonely as well, didn't have many friends. Unlike yourself, I found comfort in music, and that sort of got me through those dark times. But you weren't quite so lucky with that in that regard. You turned to alcohol and cannabis to escape the pain. Your whole life began to unravel, didn't it, pretty much?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and thank you for, you know, your kind words. And you know, I'm sorry that the book was upsetting in some ways, but also very touched that, you know, you could relate to a lot of it. I guess it's
definitely
something that all of us, well, not all of us, but, you know, a sizable amount of, you know, students at some point may experience, unfortunately. But yeah, that's right. And I didn't understand it at the time because, you know, once I'd left that bullying environment, I thought, this is great. I'm no longer, you know, I can move on with my life. Little did I know that because of that constant exposure, day in, day out on my developing brain, thinking, you know, today might be the day they do me in for good, I was developing a traumatic response, which was very similar to, I guess, soldiers or police officers who are in actual real-world frontline, you know, life or death situations start to experience. The difference, of course, was that I was a small boy, probably wasn't actually in any life or death danger, but my brain didn't know any different. So I developed a traumatic response, a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder. So even though I left that environment, my view of the world had changed. I was constantly viewing the world as completely hostile. I'd been misdiagnosed as having ADD because I really had a lot of trouble concentrating on one thing for too long. And what was later pointed out to me was that I was constantly scanning my environment for threats, similar to someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, like a returned soldier. So, yeah, I sought solace in drugs and alcohol. I found it so hard to engage with school, even though I knew my right from wrongs, so I just couldn't pay attention. And of course, I then fell in with other kids who were also going through their own difficulties and traumas. And we just kind of compounded each other's, you know, warped worldviews, I guess, and it spiraled from there.
Because you were so young back then. I mean, how does a young person, I guess, get into that awful situation? But once you're in that situation, you're so young, you don't know how to get out of it.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, life's difficult enough, you know, for a normally developed, you know, a normal developing adolescent, I guess, or small child. And, you know, going through such difficulties, you know, even if I was, well, you know, I wasn't aware of what was going on half the time. I couldn't articulate what was going on. Even, you know, what was going on to me as a process, you know, the problems it was causing, I had no awareness about. So, you know, certainly I knew something was wrong with the bullying and I spoke up about that and unfortunately nothing happened. In fact, it made it worse over time. But as far as that long-term trauma, you know, I had no insight into the actual impact that was having on my behaviour until I was, you know, in my late 20s when I was actually, you know, I dealt with the drugs and the alcohol, but then, you know, I sought help for some depression I was dealing with. And this wonderful psychologist was actually able to kind of, you know, lead me to a real aha moment where I could she linked through the traumatic response that developed as a result of that bullying and the damage that played on my later life.
Because when you're younger, obviously you're going through this awful time and you're hanging out with mates and getting into trouble and getting into fights and everything like that. But your parents, I guess, people would say, were your parents there for you enough? Were they aware fully of what was happening at that time?
Initially, I guess, with the bullying, probably not. And it's something I know they deeply regret. Even though I raised it, I think we're talking now about kind of early 90s. Mm. At that time, I think the impact of bullying really wasn't understood properly. It was still kind of seen as normal schoolyard fights, you know, people having a go at each other. And you know, I think all of us have participated in that at some stage. But that kind of pervasive, pathological targeting of someone, I really think wasn't researched so well then, particularly the long-term effects. So they did speak to the teachers. They did speak out on my behalf, but I don't think it was taken seriously as it would be today. Now, going further, when I started to spiral out of control, my parents were the first ones they were pulling their hair out trying to find answers. They were dragging me from one doctor to one psychologist to one psychiatrist to the next. And unfortunately, I guess who they took me to just didn't have an awareness of what the problem was, or they thought it may have been something else, such as the ADD. When I really started to spiral out of control, when I was really, going to the hospital emergency departments or police cells, you know, they were just distraught. And, they would have moved heaven and earth to find a solution for me, but unfortunately there wasn't one at the time. And, that just fueled my guilt as well, I guess, and sense of self-worth just, went through the floor even further during that time because of that.
My special guest this morning on the show is author James Fry, chatting about his confronting powerful book called The Fry Boy, More with James next on Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, Friday morning show with Leo on Australia's only LGBTI radio station, Joy 94.9. My guest this morning has had a difficult life from being bullied at school before turning to alcohol and drugs to raise the pain of that bullying. He's lived to tell the tale in this great new book called That Fry Boy. Now, before the break, James, we're talking about your parents and what they went through as a result of your behaviour when you were younger. You said in the book that addiction clouds one's self-awareness. You saw a lot of specialists during that time in trying to take control of the situation. They didn't really help you, did they? Because you went to a few specialists and they just didn't help you.
Yeah, that's right. And looking back, because I was so young at the time, my perception of what happened then is that of a child, really. And did they have a better awareness than I thought? Looking back, maybe they did. But really, I was put down as either, A, acting out just because of my ADD, B, just being a naughty kid and needed tougher discipline, or C, maybe having some kind of real severe psychiatric condition that needed for me to be put away for. But, at the end of the day, when I look back now and through the work, with great mental health professionals later on in life, it was clear that, this spiral started because of the bullying, the traumatic response and the drug and alcohol stuff that followed. And I needed to treat the drug and alcohol problem first, once it got to the level it did, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to make gains on all the other areas of my life. So I'm really grateful that, even though that help wasn't available when I was younger, and it could have saved a lot of pain if it was, the fact that I got brought into the path of certain people later on, I'll forever be grateful for that.
Because also you're doing alcohol and cannabis, but also other drugs, including speed. You also overdosed on Valium as well, to end up in hospital for 2 days. And you came home, and then within a couple of hours, you were stealing money from your mum's wallet and going and getting drunk again. Was it the lowest point of this whole experience? Was it a low point for you? I mean, nearly dying and then coming home and still thinking, okay, well, I've learnt my lesson. I'm going to be good now. I'm going to get things in order, and then doing the same thing again.
Yeah, Leo, that's a really good question. When I look back, obviously with the benefit of hindsight and a bit of time and space since then, yes, I would say, objectively that was one of the lowest points. However, in the midst of it, I guess, and again, it comes back to, anyone who's had a bad habit or an addiction or whatever a trouble in their life they don't really want to deal with. In that moment, we find ways of minimising it or justifying, an action that might encourage that kind of behaviour even further. And you know, I certainly regretted what I was doing, and I certainly knew what I was doing wrong. But I guess the alternative of not doing that and, you know, staying sober and, you know, not having anyone to talk to apart from, you know, holding myself up in my parents' house, which is what I try and do when I try to achieve any kind of sobriety, was more terrifying than dealing with the guilt and the shame and the risk of going back out again. So, I mean, that's really, it's not to excuse what I did, but I felt, you know, it was the, you know, the better of two bad options, really.
Yeah, I guess the turning point in your life would have been the birth of your son, because you met a girl called Bree, you eventually got married. Obviously, this started on your way back to getting your life in order, because you went through the 12-step program.
That's right.
How did that program help you, and how did you get through that process?
Yeah, you're right. When I found out my now wife was pregnant, I thought, that's great. This is going to be what's going to clean me up. Because I'd always heard of, I guess, old aunts and uncles saying, oh, you know, John Smith or Jane Smith, they were pretty wild, and then they had a child and they settled down. And I thought, great, that's going to be the magic solution I've been waiting for. And, you know, I remember my son was born, and, you know, in the birthing suite, I had, you know, a pocket full of ecstasy. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, you know, this change is going to happen very soon. And it didn't. You know, I kept going out and getting drunk, or, you know, going to raves and taking bucket loads of drugs and trying to be a good father at the same time, and looking into his eyes and just that unconditional love he had for me, and thinking, you know, what a fraud. I'm such a fraud. And, you know, that guilt alone wasn't enough to start things, but it was enough for me to have another go at searching for some help, you know. And I was fortunate that I found my way to a 12-step program. And through the 12-step program, I guess, you know, I found a group of people that were wanting me to get sober and acknowledge that, you know, maybe I had a drug and alcohol problem, which was for the first time, you know, anyone else that had wanted to, I guess, help me address that problem. People would always try and minimise that. Oh, maybe you just need to drink a bit less. Maybe you need to, you know, only take these kind of drugs, you know, every second weekend or whatever. And these people said, listen, you know what? You might not have a drug and alcohol problem, but if you do, you know, stick around and you know, we might be able to help you. And that really kicked off a process. And with 12-step programs, you know, I understand it's not for everyone, but for me, you know, it started to address not only just staying sober, but the things that I really battled with staying sober. You know, what to do when I wasn't using drugs and alcohol, how to deal with people sober, how to have a conversation with people sober, confronting a lot of the demons I guess I'd been suppressing. And, you know, that alone wasn't enough to, you know, bring me great mental health, but it laid the foundation. You know, once I could deal with the drugs and alcohol, that immediate crisis with that, then I could start, you know, working with mental health professionals to look at some of the underlying issues. Because if I was still drinking or drugging, you know, I'd be caught in this endless cycle. And so, yeah, I had to deal with that first.
And the great news is, I guess today you've come out of it full circle. You're clean, you're sober, you're a changed person, and congrats on that, by the way. It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
You got a university degree, you worked with homeless youth, you worked as a paramedic. So what's your life like these days, I guess, looking back?
Yeah, sometimes I feel it's gone too far the other way. And, you know, I live very much, you know,
happy life.
It's a life I'm incredibly grateful for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one that's pretty much unknown to, you know, how I was before. And, you know, it is a really, you know, it's a great life at times. You know, I still crave a bit of excitement, but I search for that in healthy ways. You know, today, yeah, raising kids and doing the 9-to-5 and, you know, doing some more writing, which is, you know, I guess was one of the things how the book came about was, you know, I was looking for a little bit of an outlet, and I've always loved reading. So I thought, you know, what can I write about? And I thought, well, what about my own story first? I know that well. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to pick up a publisher, and here we are.
And finally, James, if there's anyone out there listening to this interview today that's been bullied, that has suffered from addiction of some sort, whether it's alcohol, drugs, and want to find that light at the end of that very dark tunnel, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say, you need to keep searching and speaking out until you get the help you need. There's a lot of messages out there saying, you know, if you're in trouble, put your hand up, speak out. That's great, but just remember, the first person you might ask, the first agency you might go to, the first psychologist you may go to, they might not be able to be the one that helps you at that time. Don't give up. just keep searching. There's some great people out there. There's some great social support groups. There's some awesome psychiatrists, psychologists. There's also some duds. So if you get a bad one, treat it like a restaurant. You know, you don't give up eating and go sit in the corner and be hungry. You just go find something else that's going to suit you. Back yourself. There's some great people out there that can help you. And don't give up till you find them.
Some great advice from Mr. James Fry this morning, the author of a powerful new book called That Fry Boy, available in stores and in all good bookstores right now. If you need help or someone to talk to about anything related to drugs, alcohol, depression, being bullied, there's some great organisations out there, including Beyond Blue on 1300 224636, and Alcoholics Anonymous on 1300 222222. Thanks for joining me this morning on the show, James.
No problem, Leah. Thanks so much for having me.
No worries at all. And best of luck for the book. And it's a great read and amazing. It's a powerful book, actually. As I said before, the first few chapters was like, oh, I've been through that. And so it's quite confronting. But yeah, congrats on that. It's fantastic.
Thanks so much, Leah. I really appreciate your kind words.
Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.